RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit thetford.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next great camping trip is one for the record books.
And by Highway West Vacations. Highway West invites you to connect with family, friends, and nature as you experience the beauty and adventure found in the great American West. Visit HighwayWestVacations.com to start planning your next great trip today.
And by Outdoorsy, the largest and most trusted rental marketplace. Outdoorsy is making it safe and easy to make money renting your RV with full insurance, roadside assistance, secure payments, and real people ratings and reviews. Visit Outdoorsy.co to find a cool RV to rent or see how much you can earn renting your RV today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are giving listeners a sneak peek at our upcoming trip to the Pacific Northwest. We will be visiting 6 different campgrounds in 3 states and can't wait for this epic journey to begin.
We will talk about our traveling decisions, including our choice to fly cross-country instead of towing the RV. Plus, we will share some of our go-to resources for planning this epic 25-day adventure.
You might think a trip cross-country takes months for the RV enthusiast, but we know that flying to the campground is an option worth considering. You are listening to episode number 147, Planning a Trip to the Pacific Northwest.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, planning a trip to the Pacific Northwest, it's time for our RV News Minute, which is sponsored by Jayco.
The Precept Class A motorhomes come with Jayco's exclusive J-Ride Plus ride and handling package and an industry-leading 2-year limited warranty to make the trip just as luxurious and comfortable as your time at camp is. Visit your local Jayco dealer or visit Jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
You know, they have a Precept with bunks.
Yeah, that would be a nice one to take cross country.
That would be a mighty nice one to take cross country.
Yeah, no problem there.
We'll get right on that.
Give us a call, Jayco.
Anytime. All right, so Stephanie, what's the RV News Minute this week?
All right, well, you know what? I saw something interesting in the Woodall's Campground Management that we tend to read often, just because it's an interesting look at the campground industry, which we cover almost as much as we cover the RV industry, really.
I mean, we do. We dork out and we read the trade magazines.
It's very interesting. But anyway, there was a story about a company called Cruise Inn, and that's I-N-N, right? Cruise Inn, play on words there, get it, people?
The punsters.
Ha-ha, right? And this company is actually shutting down, which is like, why are you sharing this? Well, I felt like it was interesting what they tried to do and then that it didn't work. And you could take away from that what you will, but, you know, we had some thoughts on it. So Cruise Inn started about 3.5 years ago, trying to craft a new concept in RV park and campground sector. Now, you are familiar with certain franchise brands in the campground industry, like KOA or Jellystone, also membership campgrounds like Encore, Thousand Trails. Well, Cruise Inn said that they were doing something different. What they were trying to do, and they were starting out in the Florida market where there are over 10,000 campgrounds. So they felt like that was a really good place to start. And they said less than 1,000 of them had any sort of branding recognition, national branding recognition, being one of those companies that I've already mentioned. So they thought that this was a good place to test this idea. And what they were trying to do was, instead of creating a franchise, they were trying to create a collective so that they would have this company where campgrounds could join, almost like a support network, they said. And what the campgrounds could do was pool together resources on sales, marketing, reservations, and also bulk purchasing in order to streamline operations for park owners and save them money. Now, on the surface level, I was like, well, it seems that they're on point with what many independent campgrounds need, because so many of us are frustrated when independent campgrounds don't have a good reservation system, right? When you're like calling and leaving
people
a message.
Getting spoiled and they're getting used to be able to book online mm-hmm. and have a streamlined process where if you call and they're like, well, you can send your check too, you know,
yeah, that doesn't
people,
really work
a lot of people don't
us.
Want to do that anymore.
Right. And also wanting some of the standards that you can expect when you know a brand and you have that recognition. So they thought all the people, there's people that were involved, the Vantage Hospitality Group. The major players here were veterans in the hotel hospitality area. And I think that is something that we've seen. We've seen people coming from the hotel hospitality industry and saying, hey, let's bring what hotels do so well and bring them to campgrounds that are a unique experience and try it out there.
Well, we're visiting that new campground in Kennebunkport, Maine later this mm-hmm. summer. I believe it's called Sandy Pines. And they are a couple that came from the hotel industry and are moving into the campground industry because they see opportunity there. So I think your point is a very valid one, that we might see more people coming in from the hotel industry into the RV camping ground industry.
Right. So when this brand, Cruise Inn, launched in 2013, the backers wanted to gain 15 parks in 2014, 35 parks in 2015, and have 100 parks by the end of 2016. So that was like their target number for sort of a good collective for to build brand awareness, was that 100 parks. But unfortunately, only 42 parks by this point, by early June, had joined the collective, and Cruise Inn backers decided to call it quits. So it didn't work, but you know, it's always interesting to me that sometimes things that don't work show what will work later on. You know, it's like early
ahead of their time.
Well, and that's what, you know, some of the press release did say, that they really truly believe that this is still sort of a way for campgrounds to, you know, collectively build national brand awareness instead of people just kind of trying to figure out every time they go someplace, is this a good campground for me? You know how Marriott, you know, we've stayed in Residence Inn, and we know that when we're traveling, a Residence Inn is a good choice for us.
But the campground industry is so radically different because you can build every Residence Inn to have the same quality and the same look and feel. You can't build every campground to have the same quality and the same look and feel simply because of geography and landscape.
Yeah. So it's a tricky thing that will continue. I think that it's always something that we've been focusing on ever since we had that, the campground owner from Arizona, you know, and it just like that bringing that hotel mentality. And I think that we're going to get a little piece of that when we visit the Highway West Vacations properties, because I think that they are trying to do that too, bring some of that luxury hotel feel and combine it with the best that a campground has to offer.
I think you're right. I think we'll see more of that. I mean, I guess we'll have to remain to – what remains to be seen is like, is KOA – just so good at this, and is Jellystone so good at this? You know, is there a room for a kind of a third kind of player in that sense? I mean,
right.
I know this is a bit of a different model, but I'm just
wondering. Question is do you need a different model, or does somebody that wants brand awareness, should they just join a franchise like Jellystone or KOA? You know, is that just the answer, and that's been working for long enough, and that's going to continue to work?
For those campgrounds are doing well,
yeah,
and their collective marketing is working well.
All right, well, we'll keep an eye on things like that as they develop, of course, because we find that interesting in the campground industry. So now we're going to go into our first segment for this episode, which is all about the planning of our Pacific Northwest trip. Usually we wait to report on a trip until we've done it, but we thought that this trip is unique because we've made decisions that are different than decisions we've ever made before, especially in terms of flying cross country. So we wanted to devote an episode to sort of the way that we plan this out, if anybody else is thinking about doing the same sort of thing. So stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment one on our big episode about planning a trip to the Pacific Northwest. Before we dive into our thinking and our reasoning and our planning behind going to the Pacific Northwest without our RV, it's time for a sponsored message by Cabela's.
Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the outdoors, even if you are going on an adventure that doesn't involve bringing along your RV. From newly released tenting equipment designed with over 50 years of brand experience, to grills for the back deck, to coolers for a day at the beach, Cabela's can outfit you for whatever your perfect summer day entails. We are all packed up with the boys' hiking backpacks, safety tools, and first aid kits for our trip to the Pacific Northwest, so you can gear up for your summer at Cabela's.com.
Are we really all packed up?
Well, okay. I have these things in a giant pile. Let's put it that way. Hiking
we're
backpacks, those things are in a giant pile.
I think that we should be honest and that we're about 3 to 4 days away from this trip and things are going a little bonkers around here, around the
house.
Yeah,
but those things are kind of in a pile. Why? Because I had to pilfer them out of the RV. Like I had to, we're so stocked in our RV. For adventure, right? Like, so trips, if you're going on a trip, here's all the stuff you need. I had to really make sure I was getting the things that we need that I'm just used to being there out of the RV.
Well, you had done such a good job of having the RV ready for a trip that it was getting pretty stress-free to leave even for the big trips. But now this whole airplane thing, it's frightening.
It is. I don't know what we're going to forget. But we'll give people that maybe just tuning in a little bit of background. This actually isn't the very first time that we have flown to an RV destination for us. This past January, we did it for the very first time. Our boys actually were on a plane for the very first time when we flew down to Florida for the Florida RV Super Show in Tampa and then followed that up with an RV vacation at Fort Wilderness.
With a rental from Lazy Days.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to be honest, I did not want to drive the RV down to Florida in January because I was worried that there would be snow and I wouldn't be able to get back home. I mean, I have to get back home to teach.
Yeah.
And I just thought that's just too much of an X factor to leave and 10 days later be planning on driving back. So we finally said, well, why don't we just find another way to do it and be at a campground, Fort Wilderness, and be in an RV, a lovely Class C. From Lazy Days.
And we covered all of that, right? We covered all of our rental at Lazy Days, Fort Wilderness, back on our podcast episodes this previous winter. So I feel actually fairly good about this trip because honestly, that vacation went off very well. Like there were no big hitches.
It was kind of exciting to be in an RV that wasn't ours. Right. It was really nice to bus down to Tampa and be there in a couple hours.
Yeah. I did not want to spend 2 days on either end getting there because our time was limited. And that
I get like 9 days off in the winter for my winter break. So to drive down would have eaten up time at either end. So we had a really full vacation at Fort Wilderness and at the Tampa RV Super Show, or the Florida RV Super Show.
I'm considering that a little bit of a dry run for what we're doing this time. This is going to be much more complicated because what do we have here? We have a 25-day trip over the course of 3 states, 5 campgrounds, and 5 national parks. So, yes, that's a little more than going to a Tampa RV show.
And this is turning into a real national parks trip for us. I mean, we are packing in some of our top destinations that we've wanted to do for a long time in terms of national parks, Redwoods, Olympic. You're going to see lots of hiking pictures, lots of national parks pictures.
All right. So let's just dive in more specifically to this trip and talk about our decision to fly cross country instead of tow the RV, which some people may be a little, you know, question that because a cross country RV trip is an iconic American experience, right? And we're honestly in the position to do that considering we have our summer, right? We do travel a lot in the summer. And technically, we probably could have made that work.
And I think that next summer we will. I mean, going to this summer.
So the question is, why did we decide to fly and not drive? And there were three really deciding factors in this. And the first is time. When you factor in the amount of days it would have taken us to get both across country and back, right? And all of the nights that we would have had to stop, especially since we have 3 younger kids, that would have actually had to add to our travel time or take away from our time in the Pacific Northwest. That's just math, right?
And this is like a 50-hour plus drive.
Yeah.
And with our 3 boys in the RV, it would have taken a lot longer.
A lot
than
longer
that.
Than that. And then you say to yourself, well, do I just blow by everything to get out there? Well, that doesn't make sense to me. So the second thing was money, All right. The question is it cheaper to tow your RV across country than it is to just fly there and then have the same kind of campground experience while we're out there? And guess what? It is much cheaper for us to drive than to fly.
Though, you just said it. We want our maximum amount of time in the Pacific Northwest. For this trip, we don't want to be seeing things along the way.
Right. And that was my third point, was that you have the focus of the trip, right? So if you're going to drive a huge long way, you want to actually enjoy the journey. You don't want to be just getting past things to get out to the Pacific Northwest. So since we wanted to maximize our time out there, it was like, really, we're going to just drive by all of these things, Mount Rushmore, Yellowstone, right? All of these things just to get to a location. That doesn't make sense for us as travelers. If we're not going to stop and enjoy the entire cross-country trip, then why not just fly? Because the actuality of it is that I bought all of our plane tickets for $1,600.
That was a shocker. When you went on that night and said that the tickets were that price for five of us,
I was stalking them for many months.
I was like, go, you got to buy them right now.
$1,600, that includes all taxes and fees. The final bill was $1,600. So we're going to tack on under $1,000 more for a car rental for the entire trip. Okay. And then, of course, everything else pretty much remains the same, because campground fees are going to be campground fees. Food is going to be food costs, whether we have our RV or not, because we will be staying in places with food preparation. So the major, you know, really, when I calculate our cost for plane and car, it comes out to be less than we would spend towing across country, because not only because of gas, but because we would have had to stay at so many campgrounds on our way out, because we can't drive straight through.
And out of any destination I can think of in the country, the Pacific Northwest is a destination where I really want to spend my time there over a long period of time, and I don't want to be worried about stops along the way. So I think this makes sense for us, and we're going to get a lot of great campground reviews in.
All right. So let's talk about some of the pros that we really feel like flying out there and, you know, doing it the way we're going to do it. The pros of that. We decided that, again, we wanted a quick journey to a faraway destination. We didn't want it to take forever to get there. We will be leaving. We'll be flying out at about 12 noon, and we will be out in Seattle by 5 in the afternoon, you know, 5 in the evening. So we will be able to go across country in a few hours, and that's really priceless for us right now with our boys. Now, another pro to the way we're doing it is we're still enjoying the campground experience.
That's pivotal. I don't want to go to the Pacific Northwest and stay in hotels or stay in bed and breakfasts, okay? Though we may be spending one night in the La Quinta,
which is not
a campground. But here's the deal. We want to cover campgrounds from all around the country. And this is a great way for us to get 5 campground reviews for Campground of the Week out in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, content, right? And then another pro is that we're going to be able to enjoy some great urban locations without worrying about the RV, right? Like, everybody knows you can find urban campgrounds near, you know, cities, but you're going to trade off the campground experience. This way, it's going to be super easy for us. We're, you know, to just jet in to Portland, to Seattle. We're going to really be able to take in some of these urban locations that we like, and we're not going to be worrying, oh, do we want to get a campground really close with our RV? You know, it's just going to be easy for us to go in for the day in our rental car, explore the city, go back to the campground at night. So, you know, that's always...
No, it's not all pros.
No,
because we do love the RV, and I think both of us know that we're probably going to end up missing it. So what are some of the cons of traveling this way?
Packing challenges. You get really spoiled with RV travel. You get to bring what you want to bring, right? So you're used to having your wardrobe. You're used to having all your shoes lined up at the bottom of the bed. So I don't really have to decide between my sandals and my, like, boat shoes, right? I can bring them both, no problem. You don't have to pack super, you know, strictly on an RV trip. You just don't. I mean, technically, you can always throw that last bag in.
Yeah, and now we're going for 25 days. And the Pacific Northwest in the summer can be warm and summery, but it can also be chilly and rainy, depending on where we are at any given moment. If we're hiking in a rainforest, you know, we need clothes for that type of hike. So we have to bring a wide variety of clothing
exactly.
in a small amount of space,
yeah,
which is going to be a challenge.
It is a challenge. I learned a lot from our trip to Disney in terms of the packing, and it was so funny. The one thing that I left behind on our Disney trip was the packing cubes, because each boy had a roller suitcase and a backpack. That was all they were allowed to bring. And again, that will be the case for this trip, except we'll also be checking a large duffel. But I didn't include their packing cubes. And that was such a big mistake. It was hysterical because my favorite thing in the RV, I was missing even on a fly trip.
So the packing cubes are going to come this time. They are going to go into the large duffel or into their individual bags.
Into their individual roller bags. So they're each going to have the packing cubes to separate pants from shirts, from PJs and stuff. But then also there's going to be one extra packing cube in each of their roller bags for dirty laundry.
Because love it.
I want to separate.
Love it, Mom.
Dirty
you don't
laundry.
Want their dirty laundry touching your
no,
dirty laundry.
No, you know what the problem is their dirty laundry gets mixed up with their clean laundry, and then it all smells
and boys
funky.
Are gross.
Yeah, their socks smell.
Well, because they wear them for
I
days
hope
on end.
They don't get mad at me for saying that. I don't think they'll get mad at me for saying that because I think they think it's funny that their feet smell.
Now, we're not traveling with our RV kitchen, which that's really a big deal for us.
That's my number one concern. Packing, I can do, and I don't really stress out about it too much. Food is going to be really difficult for me. We travel more now than ever for work, for what we do with RVFTA, and we find ourselves staying in hotels for that kind of when we go to like RV shows far away or conferences. And I hate waking up in the morning
and, like,
in the hotel room and having to get breakfast, because my favorite thing to do is wake up in my RV, make a nice smoothie with my blender and all my fruits and vegetables in the refrigerator.
You're not bringing your Ninja.
I can't bring my Ninja. Like, I am struggling with how that's going to be. Now, one of the things that we are doing is we're doing a nice, we're going to do some fireside provisions because we love them.
So we're going to do solid fireside provisions, maybe for 4 or 5 days worth of the food.
Absolutely. So that's going to help
out.
And
we interviewed Kip from Fireside Provisions about a year ago.
So on one of our Weekend Warrior
episodes. One of the second Weekend Warrior podcasts. We'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're going to do that. I'm also going to be really careful about making sure that a grocery, you know, trip is a priority when we're going to a new destination and not something that we're constantly like, oh, we got to get to the food store. We got to get to the food store. So, you know, once we get there, I think we can load up on the food, and every place that we're staying has a kitchen. So that's just going to be an adjustment for us. So I'm worried about that.
Does the safari tent have a kitchen?
It does. The safari tent.
It has like a little kitchen.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
But I do think that over the course of 25 days will be a source of some frustration, and we'll be spending lot more money than we're used to spending on a long trip.
Absolutely.
One of the reasons we can go on 25 to 30 day RV trips is because we don't spend a fortune on food.
Yeah. And I think we're just still going to have to do that. Like, we are going to have to get the peanut butter and jelly. For sandwiches.
And I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be doing a lot of hiking, you know, so we don't want big elaborate meals at a restaurant. Now, the gear limitations are also a con, because we love to kayak and we own 2 kayaks. We're not bringing our kayaks to the Pacific Northwest. So if we want to do any boating or anything like that, we're renting it.
Right.
So in terms of bringing gear, like, we're bringing
bikes.
Hiking. We're not bringing our bikes. I know. I mean, we could rent, but then you're renting bikes. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to rent a bike every day for 25 days. And also, like, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking, like, I'm bringing my hiking boots and we're going to bring our baseball gloves. Like, the boys are baseball crazy right now. I can't imagine not having the baseball gloves. Beyond that, we're not bringing any outdoor gear that I can think of.
Oh, yeah. We're so spoiled. I mean, at the campground, the boys are like, oh, can I have the basketball? Oh, can I have the this? Can I have the that?
The football, the frisbee, the cornhole.
The cornhole.
I mean, it is crazy. The toy hauler has
recreation galore.
It probably has more recreational gear than our house has in it at the moment.
What I want to make sure we do is rent if it makes sense to rent. So I don't want to not go on that canoe ride or not go on that kayak ride or even that bike ride just because we have to go and we have to rent the bikes. I want to be really good at not being cheapo like that, because I do think that that adds to the experience. So it's like, if it's a nice place to take a bike ride, I want to go and I want to get bikes to rent and go on a bike ride. So
yeah, I think so too. And I mean, I don't want to pass up an experience to do some kayaking out there. It adds an expense and it's not your own equipment. You know, we're used to having our own equipment that fits us so well and is so perfect for us.
Yeah. But we're saving money because we're not towing all the way out to the Pacific Northwest. So you just have to build that in to your budget. Like, you know, I really think that's important. I think that I say things like that almost to hold us accountable, because I want to have great experiences, even though we're a little bit out of our travel comfort zone here. So those are the pros and the cons. Now, you want to talk about the actual trip?
I am so excited for this trip. I mean, we're both kind of overwhelmed getting ready for it right now. But this is our dream trip, I think, for both of us. And I'm so excited that we're leaving in just 3 or 4 short days. So we're arriving in Seattle. And then we are going to go as far south as the Redwoods in California. And then we're looping all the way back up to Seattle. So on the way down, doing more coastal. And on the way up, doing a little bit interior. But we're doing a huge loop, basically covering the entire Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the campgrounds that we're staying at. So a lot of you have heard over the last couple of months, we've been talking about the Highway West campground chain. And that was what initiated this trip out there.
That jump-started that because we started working with them and talking to them about visiting their campgrounds. They were so enthusiastic about having us.
Yeah. They said, hey, what can we do to get you out to our campgrounds? And we said, ask real nice. Just say please. And we'll come. And that really did sort of create the basis. You know, like the framework.
That was the spark on this. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're going to be visiting 3 Highway West properties, and we'll be doing a Campground of the Week episode on all of the campgrounds we're visiting. So we're going to do Silver Cove RV Resort in Washington State, and that's a good place where there'll be some kayaking stuff, and they have rentals right there at the campground. Shelter Cove Resort and Marina in Oregon, again, right on the water. Gorgeous looking campground. And then also the Oceanside Beachfront RV Resort right on the Oregon coast. This is right on the beach.
Yeah. And we're like the campground's right on the beach. And even more so, we will be right on the beach because we're staying in the glamping tents that they have there, which the front of the flaps of the glamping tents look out to the ocean.
And an exciting aspect of this trip is that so many campgrounds are building alternate types of accommodations, whether it's safari tents or glamping tents or cabins. We're going to be testing out a lot of that stuff.
Testing out. Yeah. It's all for research, folks.
It's all research.
Now, heading down into the Redwoods, we're going to be spending our time there at the Crescent City Redwoods KOA in one of their cabins.
Deluxe cabin. That is 2 miles from the national park. It's about a 10-minute drive from the beach, a great campground to visit the Redwoods. Then we'll also be doing the Elwha Dam RV Park in Port Angeles, and that's going to be our base camp for Olympic National Park. So 5 amazing campgrounds lined
and
up.
And we're staying there in a house. Like, they have a
house. They have a house rental. Mm-hmm. And I called thinking there's no way I'm going to be able to afford this.
Five bedrooms. So you figure
5-bedroom house.
Yeah.
It looks either just remodeled or brand new. And can I say the price, Stephanie?
Okay.
It's $175 a night for a 5-bedroom house at a campground. So we splurged on that. But, you know, compared to the lodges in Olympic National Park that were like $400 a night for a single room.
Right.
This seemed like a great deal. And we wanted to be at campgrounds at every stop. I mean, I want to be hanging out with my RV people and taking pictures of the RVs, right?
Yeah, and this has been a focus of our content this year, too, is other ways to get that campground experience. Like we did Fort Wilderness in the rental RV, right? So you can get the benefits of campground experience even if you can't necessarily bring your RV there. So now let's talk about the national parks that we're visiting.
Oh, my gosh. Take a deep breath.
Me or you?
I mean, we are going to be hiking in 5 of the most amazing national parks in the country. Olympic National Park, right? Which just looks like paradise. There's a rainforest there. There's a stretch on the ocean, right? This is a gigantic, gorgeous national park. I really think it's probably one of the most beautiful in the country, but also a little bit less visited than a lot of the more famous ones.
Well, it's all, yeah. I mean, anytime that something is a little more, you know, isolated, like I would compare this to Acadia National Park, which we think is, you know, one of the most beautiful national parks also, but because it's all the way in the northeast corner of the United States, you know, it's harder for a lot of people to get to. And also, Olympic National Park is sort of, I would say, broken up a little bit in terms of its access. So you can end up driving a lot to really take in.
It's huge. And we are just sampling the park. But we have a solid 4 to 5
days.
We do.
And I think that the things that we chose to do, I really believe will kind of also give our children like those sort of big memories of this national park. Like we're really trying to focus in on the things that are the wow factors.
Like the whole rainforest.
Exactly. Which is just phenomenal. So, you know, I think that it's, I think we made some good choices with that. Now, we're also going to Mount Rainier And go ahead. Did you want to say something?
No. I was just going to say, and Mount St. Helens.
Right.
And these are overwhelming in a sense. You know, we're just going to have to pick and choose some really nice family day hikes for these parks because we're not going to be able to see all of them. That's for sure.
Crater Lake National Park, which is, you know, just bucket list, totally. And I think that that's, these are going to have huge impact on our boys. And that's really a lot of, you know, what we look at when we do these trips is like kind of getting, under their skin a little bit and giving them those wow moments that, you know, cause them to kind of...
Everybody says when you first see the water at Crater Lake National Park, it is a almost a shock to the system visually. It's so gorgeous. And before somebody starts penning an email, I think we should mention Mount St. Helens, I believe, is a state park.
Right.
Because I can just imagine somebody there.
All right. We should have actually put national/state parks because also in the Redwoods...
It's both.
It's the Redwoods National.
That's a unique situation there because it's like the NPS has teamed up with the California State Parks to run several parks together.
Yeah. And so these all have sort of, like we said, those wow factors that are going to be big, huge moments, I think, for all of us. And they're going to give us that span of experience for this amazing landscape that, again, is one of our favorite landscapes. We love coastal mountains.
And you and Stephanie's been to the Pacific Northwest, and you were, what, 16 years old when you took a train cross-country and went out there?
Right. So I was a teenager, one of my first big trips, because, a year later I was out in Greece for a couple months. I did. So I was a teenager, and I went with my other teenage sister. We took the Amtrak train, the Empire Line, I think it is, and you can go across the entire northern route of the country through Glacier National Park, and you get out, you go all the way to Seattle. And we actually then worked our way down to Portland. We stayed in Portland for about a month, I think it was. And then we also, I don't know if I should say this because we know we have kids watching, but we did a very stupid thing and we hitchhiked down the coast of Oregon.
RVFTA does not recommend hitchhiking for kids.
I did that. I can't believe I did that.
Different time.
We went all the way down through the dunes, all the little beautiful towns in Oregon. I remember renting a motorboat. Like,
and
we
were
teenagers.
Neither of you were even 18, I don't think.
No, but we had driver's license, so, and that's all we needed. We went up to the guy and we were like, we rent?
The world has changed.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I remember a day or two after you got home from that trip, I ran into you at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and you were telling me all about the trip, and I was like, what a cute little adventurous girl.
So, yeah, we went all the way down to the bottom of the coast, and then we went back up to Portland.
So this
and
is a big return
we
for you.
We took the train back home. So we were out there. I think it was a total of a 6 to 7 week vacation. We were gone for almost the whole summer, and it was phenomenal. It was a good experience for me, although I look back and I say, oh, my God, thank God nothing happened to me.
Nothing did.
Thank God. Thinking. All right. So now we are going to come back in a minute and we're going to talk about all of the resources that we used to plan this big epic trip. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment two of our big episode about planning a trip to the Pacific Northwest. And during this segment, we're going to talk about resources, both books and Instagram accounts and blog posts, TV shows, all the different things we've been using to help us plan and inspire us for this big trip. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. If you, like many out there, are a brand new RV owner, Thetford has products that are going to help you stock the camper with everything you need to keep those systems running free and clear. You got AquaSoft toilet tissue. It's specifically designed to dissolve easily and prevent clogging. Or you can use the AquaChem, which can keep stinky odors from overtaking your RV.
And it really does. Because, I mean, we know about stinky odors.
Yeah.
And it contains them.
Yeah.
It contains them.
It battles the stinky odors.
It battles them and it wins.
Okay. And they also have drain valve lubricator, tissue digester, and level gauge cleaner. We probably need to pour some level gauge cleaner down into our tanks for sure to see a complete lineup.
You know what, Stephanie? We do.
Yeah. Because the gauges are not working. So we should try.
We're going to email Thetford right after this show.
Level gauge. Time for testing that out. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
All right. So let's talk about the resources that we are using to plan this trip. So do you want to start with books?
Well, I know that that's where you want to start. So
there are stacks of books.
Yeah.
And I can't bring all of them. I'm not even going to bring most of them. So we're actually debating whether to photocopy some of the pages and just have a little folder.
Because that's always a pet peeve with me. You plan out of these books and then you'll be like, oh, find this hike in this book that sounded really interesting to me. And you like throw the book at me while we're driving and I'm supposed to find it. So what I wanted you to do was keep a separate running list of the things that you bookmarked in the books. So then, you know, as a note,
and that may or may not happen,
we could both have access. Yeah. But anytime I try to like organize your chaos,
some of these are broad reference books for the whole country. So for each of these, we really could just photocopy a handful of pages. So
I think take a picture with your phone.
That's a great idea. Oh my God, that's a great idea.
Oh God, you're so analog. Let me get a photocopy.
And I'm proud to be analog. All right, so let's start with the books that I'm using. And some of these will be good for you guys no matter where you're going this summer. First, I love this book called The Frommer's National Parks with Kids. Now, it is out of print, but on Amazon, they have lots of used copies for a buck or two. It might also be a little bit outdated, but hopefully not.
But the thing is with the internet, you can always cross-check anything. Like, these books, even if they're a little out of date in terms of the specific information, they're great for that inspiration, for the idea. And then all you have to do is go online and Google the information and see what the update is.
And I think this is a great book worth having if you're an RV family or just a traveling family in general. Because, look, a trip to the national parks with kids is radically different than a trip that without kids, you know, for the solo adventurer or the couple that's adventuring. I mean, you're just going to want different hikes, different activities, different things to do. So this entire book focuses on enjoying the parks with children.
Frommer's needs to do an updated version.
I know.
Come on, Frommer's.
They did two editions and it's toast.
It just seems like it would be a good seller.
Yeah. Well, Frommer's was bought
Maybe they should have asked us.
Frommer's was bought by Google.
Yeah.
And then Frommer's bought themselves back. So they've been having all kinds of drama over there at Frommer's headquarters.
They're busy. They can't focus on their national parks book.
The second book, another Frommer's. Frommer's National Parks of the American West also looks to be out of print, but many copies available used online. Very well written. This book, maybe more than any other, has me really pumped up because it's just very descriptive. It gives you all the details you need for all of the different hikes, and I definitely plan on taking some of their recommendations.
All right. Now, next, we've got the Frommer's Easy Guide to Seattle, Portland, and the Oregon Coast.
Not out of print.
Okay.
So now Frommer's has this new – and this is actually a great new series, and they have them for all over the country. These easy guides are smaller and cheaper than your typical Frommer's guides. So they're like $12.99 instead of $24. And they're about half the size. They also come with pull-out maps. And really, this is just focusing on highlights, right? I mean, this is not going to be like deep, profound insider's tips to, you know, this, that, or the other thing. This is just going to be all of the basic things you need to know in terms of food, lodging, coffee, outdoor adventure. It covers everything, but it covers everything in somewhat of a thin way, I guess.
All right. Next up, we've got a Falcon Guide, Best Easy Day Hikes, Redwood National and State Parks.
I'm a big fan of the Falcon Guides. Now, they have two different series for the hiking guides. They have their regular hiking guides, which have a lot of kind of radical, intense hikes, but then they also have these Best Easy Day Hikes. Basically, they could retitle these like Best Hikes with Kids, even though it's not intentionally meant for
kids. Because there's other types of people that need – exactly.
Might want to do the same hikes that we would do with our four-year-old.
Right.
Which is terrific. And these
are people that need universal access for some reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So these hikes are going to be like 2 to 5 miles. Actually, 1 to 5 miles. I mean, there's some hikes in here that are a mile. They're very small books that can fit in your pocket. And they're only $10 each. And there's about like 20 to 30 hikes in the book. I have almost read this one cover to cover, and for the Redwoods, it will be our primary guide.
Right, and also for Olympic National
Park.
Same
thing. I got the Falcon Guide, Best Easy Day Hikes for Olympic National Park, $10. It's going to give you 20 to 30 of the best easier hikes. And again, I think we will use this multiple times, multiple days.
Now, the Moon Guide, this Moon Guide that you mentioned, we haven't really used it so much. So there's the West Coast RV Camping Moon Guide, and it's a complete guide to more than 2,300 RV parks and campgrounds.
In Washington, Oregon, and California. Now, we have not used use this because we picked our campgrounds early because we're partnering up with these campgrounds.
That was the easiest part of planning the trip.
Yeah, we didn't need to research campgrounds. But if you are doing a Pacific Northwest or California trip and you don't know what campgrounds you want to stay in, this has everything. This Moon Guide to West Coast RV Camping, great reference book.
And, you know, this is an area where analog still is important because if you're in any Facebook groups for camping or anything like that, you will constantly see people say, where do people go to search for campground recommendations? And to be quite honest, it is not fully developed. Like some people will say, oh, I really like RV park reviews but honestly, none of them are.
No one seems to have everything.
Everything, right? They don't.
In an updated way.
That crowdsourcing is, in a way, like sometimes it's just a matter of whether people put it on that site or not.
Also, too, not to be cynical, the crowdsource sites, too. I mean, I don't know this person that's reviewing the campground. Yeah. I don't know if they trust their judgment in the way that you trust our judgment on like a campground of the week. It's not curated in that sense. It's just anybody could put up a review.
Right.
And they might have bugaboos that you don't have.
And the nice thing about TripAdvisor is usually the scale of reviews, it makes it enough that you can kind of sort out the good ones from the bad and get a good idea of what that is. But, you know, in a lot of cases, it's really helpful still to have these travel guides for campgrounds.
Now, two other books that I really like that I will not be bringing with us because they're big and heavy. The National Geographic Guide to National Parks of the United States.
Love this book.
It's $26, but Barnes & Noble always has like the previous edition on sale for $7.
But it's all the national parks, all 400 and whatever of them.
And National Geographic books always bring the most expert advice. I mean, this is somebody who really knows the area, knows the region, and has studied it. Also, I really like the National Geographic Secrets of the National Parks, the Expert's Guide to the Best Experiences Beyond the Tourist Trail. I mean, Stephanie and I always pride ourselves on finding those hikes that not everyone else is doing, things that are going to be a little bit quieter, a little bit further away. And that's all this is. So you can go to any national park in the country pretty much, and it's going to give you some of the off-the-beaten-trail kind of recommendations.
Which is really important because the funny thing to us is people talk so much about how crowded the national parks are, right? And we've been to some of the so Acadia National Park, Smokies National Park. We've visited. Those are both in the top 10 most popular national parks in the country. And we've visited them at prime times. It's summer, right? When they're so busy and everybody's talking about the crowds. And guess what? In both of those places, we go to places that have nobody around. You don't see anybody. Like, sure, if you go to the visitor centers and then drive to the most popular Outlook, you're going to deal with crowds.
And the thing, too, is like in some really Great Smokies, there are hundreds of great hikes, right? So the popular ones are usually going to be popular because they're closer to the visitor center. They're easier to get to. Parking's easier.
Easier access. I mean, big waterfall view.
The Kephart Prong Trail in Great Smokies, I think we saw one or two other families on the entire hike.
Yeah.
It was one of the best hikes we've ever done.
But it was hard to find. We had to count.
It was hard to find.
Like, remember, you had to like count past a certain amount.
But the ranger gave us very specific directions.
But that was the thing. It was a ranger recommendation. It was a little bit off the beaten path, and it was a phenomenal hike. And that kind of experience can be replicated in really all of our national parks.
All right, now, I've also been getting inspired by Instagram. I mean, this isn't so much about information. It is about inspiration. I love it when the national parks have official Instagram accounts. So Mount Rainier has one. It's Mount Rainier NPS. Okay, at Mount Rainier NPS. Redwood National and State Parks has one. At Redwood NPS. And Olympic National Park has one at Olympic National Park. All three of those have gorgeous, stunning photos that are getting me so pumped to go out there. But then, unfortunately, like Crater Lake does not have an Instagram account.
Yeah, because usually what happens with this, and we've met enough rangers to kind of realize this, it takes one of the rangers in that park that
some young 22-year-old ranger
that loves social media and that says, hey, why aren't we using social media?
And that ranger gets another job and the account stops. Like, for instance, I think that Redwood's, their account, it had a photo from like last August, and then there were no photos to like March or April, but then now it's going again. So you don't have the same person staying, you know, for years and years running these Instagram accounts. They change hands a lot. Now, there are a lot of great accounts that are dedicated to the Pacific Northwest. So I love Pacific Northwest Wonderland. That's at PN Wonderland. And I also love at PNW.exploring, and then also Oregon Explored, at Oregon Explored.
Everybody knows the ad. If you're on Instagram,
don't think that everyone knows.
Okay.
Because
all
we get comments all the time on like our Facebook group, like, how do we find the Instagram?
Oh, that's right. We said there was a great Facebook suggestion from our group that said, you guys need to do a social media 101 episode. And we said,
you know what?
That will, well, we've got a million should do episodes. We put it on the board.
By the way, how's my pronunciation of Oregon?
Oregon.
Not Oregon.
Not Oregon.
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 Oregon. Oregon.
Just two syllables.
Two?
Two syllables.
It's not Oregon.
Oregon. No. Oregon.
Oregon. Like a body organ?
Did you see the comment that somebody
like
posted?
An organ in your body?
Not exactly.
Well,
like
that's
that.
Two syllables.
Oregon. Oregon. Okay. That's did you see the comment that somebody wrote that said, somebody from out there said, listening, I was about to correct your pronunciation 2 seconds before Stephanie did on the last episode.
People get all hung up on accents, don't
oh,
they?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead and say Nevada and see what happens.
People get angry.
Right?
I mean, I like it though. People pronounce things in different ways. I think that gives our language richness and diversity.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, you want to know how an indigenous population would pronounce their location. That's always
like if
interesting.
I was from like not from New Jersey and I came to New Jersey and I heard somebody say water, I would never be like, you have to say water,
water, water,
water,
water.
It's like, you know, roll with your
that's
own thing.
There's a little bit of a difference between an accent and a pronunciation, I feel like. So, you know, I mean, I'm okay with people telling me how they do it. No, don't get me worked up.
But imagine going down in the South and telling everybody they're pronouncing things wrong.
No, because they're from the South. They know the pronunciation.
Oh, so that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. If you, like, I think that you can say, like, this is how we say things in this area,
right.
You know.
But when
not,
you're an outsider.
Not a word like water that we... no matter where you go, there is water. So you can't tell somebody the right way to pronounce that. But you can tell people the right way to pronounce the location
right.
near you.
Fair enough.
Right? So like we have a town called Avon and some people would say Avon and we're like, no, it's Avon.
Yeah.
Okay,
just,
fair enough.
I'm not convinced that there's only two syllables in Oregon.
All right. Well,
I think it's,
we'll see if you're convinced after our show.
So listen, to our
Oregon.
Listeners out in the
Oregon.
Pacific Northwest, hop on our Facebook group.
Don't.
Let us know if it's two syllables or three.
All right.
We don't want to make fools of ourselves.
Other good resources. I'm cutting you off. Rock the Park, right? We watched some episodes
Rock
of Rock
the Park. Rock the Park's on episodes on most of these parks. They were great episodes. It's got the boys excited to go out and see these national parks. Also, Go RVing has some really good blog posts. So one of their bloggers who goes under the name Shore Looks Nice, I think his name's Eric Hannon, he did two posts, one on Olympic National Park and one on Redwoods National Park that had gorgeous photos, really got me pumped up and excited. And then also Monica Bennett, a.k.a. Just Five More Minutes, has done a lot of posts on the Pacific Northwest over the years because she's from the Pacific Northwest. And her post on the San Juan Islands has got Stephanie dreaming about going to the San Juan
Islands. I've been wanting to go to the San Juan Islands because I didn't get there when I was out there. And you have to, you know, I've been wanting to take that ferry out to the San Juan Islands for a year. So I'm really excited to do that. And I also wanted to say one more thing. We talked on our last show about road trip tips. And I mentioned the audiobooks. Well, one of the I Survive books that our boys are really into right now was on the Mount St. Helens eruption. So that they listened to that. That was such a key to like just kind of like building that imagination about the location.
Well, so, Theo's concerned about going to Mount St. Helens.
It's okay. It's a little fear never hurt anyone. So I think that was exciting. And anytime you can find books that are sort of even fiction, but like in that location for kids, it can get them a little hyped up and excited to visit a destination.
Okay, so those are the resources that we are using to get us pumped up and excited for this Pacific Northwest road trip. And of course, when we come back, let's just state this now for everybody, Stephanie. We're not going to be producing content on the road while we're in the Pacific Northwest. We're going to wait till we come home. We're going to put it all together. And end of July through August, we're going to get all of our Pacific Northwest content out there.
We'll be on social media.
We'll be on social media, absolutely. But we do not want to be recording podcasts in the safari tent at night and dragging the equipment around from place to place. So we will get you all of this great content end of July, August, and then look for us. Follow this great trip on social media, on Instagram, on Facebook.
All right. We will be right back with our RVFTA News Roundup. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We hope you enjoyed our featured topic, planning a trip to the Pacific Northwest. And don't forget to follow along on that big adventure on Instagram. And now it is time for our RVFTA News Roundup, which is sponsored by Outdoorsy.
Outdoorsy is the largest and most trusted RV rental marketplace, and they are making it easy to make a little scratch renting out your RV. You have a lot of options out there for renting your RV, but Outdoorsy is different than any of those other options. They have a $1 million insurance policy that covers owners. They have roadside assistance and automatic DMV background checks that are a big win for owners. We also love the owner support, like the checklist for pre-arrival, departure, and return.
I would care more about that DMV pre-check than the $1 million.
I know that's your favorite one.
Well, because I don't want some lunatic renting my RV, and they're going to check their driving record.
But I like the fact that, you know, you can check. Okay, like, so you can have a good person driving your RV. You can have a responsible family, and say something happens, like, and something gets dinged inside the RV. I think the entire experience is just that peace of mind of knowing that you can just submit the claim to Outdoorsy and they're going to fix it. And so if you're who makes a good candidate for renting out your RV, right? The question is do you want to maximize your value? Because if you're going to sit there and think, oh my gosh, if a handle ever came off a drawer, like, I don't know what I would do. Well, then maybe renting an RV isn't for you. But if you're the kind of person that says, hey, as long as somebody's going to fix it, right? Then
and
it's
also
no
if you're
deal.
The type of person who would really like your monthly payment to be paid for by renting it.
Right.
You know,
so
that, I think about, that's the attitude yeah. a lot of – we have several people in our group who have listed their RVs with Outdoorsy, and I think a lot of them, the goal is simply to cover their monthly payment, let the RV pay for itself.
Yeah, and if you're one of those people, too, that can't use your RV as much as you would like right now. There's some people that get their RV, they use it a ton, but then they go through a stage in life. Something happens, right? Work changes, kids are in a certain sport. Something happens where your use of the RV isn't as high as you would like. You're not ditching the RV. You know that you're going to get back to there. You know that you're going to use it again, but it's just not as high as you used to. This might be a perfect time to get into the RV rental market.
Look, we have lots of busy families out there who listen to this podcast, and we know that you look at that RV out in the driveway a little bit more than you'd like to. So maybe just rent it on
those
weekends.
Can I say, and one more like type of person that this might be a really good option for is if you have a really popular campground. Or a nice campground near your house.
Say Fort Wilderness.
Whatever. Even a state park. Consider the fact that you can drop off that RV and set it up for renters. So it can give people that camping experience without you having to worry about the towing.
I think that's a great way to go.
I do too. I like that idea.
I mean, I would really like to do that to say, look, I will also bring it to the campground for you and you build that into your mm-hmm. pricing and I'll pick it up for you so you don't have to tow.
And Outdoorsy has it so that you can actually charge for those options if you want to. So that, you know, those are some things to think about. Now, some other things to think about is that it seems to me these days, like over on our Facebook group about half of the RVFTA community is hanging out at Rushmore and Yellowstone and Glacier National Park.
A lot
Park.
Of big trips out west.
Yes. So here's what I wanted to say to all you listening to this episode. If you are going to any of these big, iconic American destinations this summer, make sure you reach out just for that extra little expert advice from our group, because we just mentioned other resources that we use, but it continues to amaze me how people in our group are really able to give that on like point information that is helpful to traveling families, you know, really personalized information instead of just the generic, you know, sort of thing. So I just, somebody asked a question on from Kate Dunbar, who was just at Yellowstone and leaving, and somebody piped in, "We're getting there tomorrow. Any last tips?" And Kate said, "The bugs are terrible. Make sure you have bug spray." Like, that's just useful. And that's what I love about RVFTA. It was like the woman was worried about bears, and Kate says, "Don't worry about the bears, worry about the bugs."
Well, and you know, Kate also said that she saw somebody rip both of the air conditioners off the top of their fifth wheel because no one was spotting them while they backed into a site. I think it was backing into the site. And she said that's the most common problem she's seen, is that people are backing into sites and no one's helping them and they're running into some trouble. And she said there are a lot of new RV owners out on the road, which is a reality. So just
take your time, take it slow, be extra careful. One of the reasons that I think we've had good luck with a lot of RVs, like our first, the White Hawk, I felt like we didn't have a lot of those first time owner things. And that was because you in particular were so like careful and slow about everything we did, like even putting out the awning, right? You take it slow. You make sure you're not running into anything. You pay attention.
And you love the fact that I'm careful and slow.
No, it kind of drives me crazy, but I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate
A quick mistake can cost you a lot of money.
Right. So then also there was like somebody asking about specific cave tours, and there was tons of responses that were really targeted to certain ages. Like, do you have a kid in a carrier? Do you have, you know, a little bit of older kids, or do you have preteens? Like, you can get that range there. And that was really helpful. So make sure you use that as a trip resource.
Also, big welcome home to Carrie Cox, who just got back from Europe.
She did. So this is another, you know, thing that it's amazing to see how far and wide all of our RVFTA community members are traveling. We've got Scott up in Alaska. I mean, just everybody's.
And he took some gorgeous pictures up there.
Yeah.
And he went without the RV. And I don't know that he's saying he totally regrets it, but he said he did miss the RV in a lot of ways.
Well, Carrie, the interesting thing was that Carrie was saying she posted about what she misses about the campground after a month of hotel stays. And that was just such a, you know, that was so interesting to me because I said, yeah, this is why even though we're not bringing an RV, we're still trying to get the campground experience because I recognize that it's just as much about the campground. Now, I wrote a blog post ages ago that I thought of when I read her post. And I had written a blog post called Unpacking the Value of a Cabin. And the reason I wrote that blog post was I've seen a lot of people do this. They're not going to have their RV, so they look into the price of cabins at a campground and they go, oh my gosh, this is more than a hotel room. Why wouldn't I just stay at a hotel? Well, I want to point out that you're paying more than a hotel room because you're getting more.
It's like a little house with a front yard.
Yeah, you're getting the campground experience. So if you've had that reaction when traveling without your RV, like you've been like, oh, let's look at cabins. And you're like, that's really pricey. I'd rather stay at the La Quinta. Then, you know, consider saying, wait a minute. How much does it cost for happiness with my family while traveling? Because when you stay at that cabin and the kids have the playground right there and you're sitting around the campfire at night, even though you don't have your RV, that makes all the difference in the world. Carrie said they really miss their downtime outside at the end of the day. When you're traveling, you're staying at a hotel, you can't be outside for downtime, right? Just like sitting in your camp chair, relaxing. You like go back to the hotel room. And what happens? You turn on the TV and you sit there in your bed at like 7:30 because watching TV because you're tired. You know, you don't want to be out at a restaurant or whatever.
It's a great way to put it. Just that time relaxing, doing a whole lot of nothing. At the campground, you can do it out in nature, where at a hotel, you're stuck in a little box.
Yeah. So, that was a helpful post. And I'll also put a link to my post about unpacking the value of the cabin in the show notes. So, everybody, we look forward to bringing you lots of great content from this big trip that we're taking. We're super excited and we can't wait to share all of our fun experiences with you.
And we will see you in the Pacific Northwest.
See you at the campground.